Hello, and welcome to Little Steps, Big Futures, the podcast that brings you all things early years. Each week, we chat to some incredible guests with amazing stories, talk about childcare tips, and delve into some controversial topics. I'm Aoife Murphy.
And I'm Jenny McCarty.
Let's get started.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Today we have Donna joining us from Dyslexia Matters Ireland. She's one half of Dyslexia Matters Ireland. We're very excited to talk to her today because I guess it's a topic that we all have heard about, but we may not know kind of all the details about it, I guess. I would say going through school and all my life, the term has come up a lot. And I'm very excited to kind of learn more about it as well. I suppose it's very important as educators and as parents to be equipped with the information and the knowledge around it, just in case it comes a time where either your son, daughter, or a child in your care, you know, presents with dyslexia. So, Donna, we're very happy to have you on today. How are you doing?
Good, thank you, Jennifer. And Aoife, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here and I'm looking forward to our chat today.
So are we, and like Jenny said, it's something that crops up time and time again, but I think, you know, this conversation is going to shed some light on kind of the ins and outs of it, and we're excited to dive in. But before we do, I suppose, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are?
Yeah, so my name is Donna and I'm a primary school teacher, and I have been for the last, it's getting longer and longer, 17 years now. I am one half Dyslexia Matters Ireland, the other half being my sister Tracy, who is also a primary school teacher. She's been teaching just a couple of years less than I have. And we in the last year or so, we've embarked on Dyslexia Matters Ireland because it's an area that we feel very strongly about, and in terms of helping parents and teachers understand more about the whole area. So yeah, we are very excited about working in this area.
You come from a family of two primary school teachers, and something that we always ask our guests is, where did the passion for working with children come from? Is it something that you've always kind of loved and wanted to do?
Well, actually, there's three of us. So there's three primary school teachers in our house. Neither of my parents are teachers. I've got one aunt who's a teacher, but this generation of cousins, there are several of them. So it must be in the blood somewhere. I just always knew that I wanted to be in the caring profession. I did toy with nursing for a while, but leaving cert biology quickly put me off. So then it was teaching. I'm very lucky in terms, I always kind of knew what I wanted to do. Like I definitely had to be the caring profession. And then I settled on teaching then in the leaving cert cycle, and went from there. Like, but I took the long way around, did an arts degree first, then a postgrad, and qualified then. But yeah, very happy with my decision, and I really do love my job. So it, and as my sisters do too, they're both teaching, and sure, look, Christmas in our house is just chats about teaching, so everybody's sick of listening to it, but we love it.
No, that must be great. Your parents must be delighted to say, oh, you have three teachers in the house. So and I suppose, you know, working with children, you must come across, you know, a variety of children who have learning disabilities. They might be on the spectrum. Is that something that, like, you were prepared for when you went into teaching 17 years ago, or is that something that you continuously have to be looking out for and developing, I suppose, professionally?
Yeah, I mean, you do learn about additional needs in college, but I mean, you really do learn the ground, don't you? Like, you know, when you meet children and when you have that situation in front of you, when you're speaking to parents, yeah, you learn on the job, very much so. And then I suppose you pull the information that you knew from the theory and try and build on that to help the child. So every year brings its challenges. No class is ever the same. No child is ever the same. So whatever may work for one child may not work for the next child that you meet with the same additional needs. You have to think on your feet and learn on the job each year. So each and every child is very different. And if you meet one child with any kind of additional needs, you've met that one child, and what, you know, and you can put that kind of what you've learned from working with that child into your toolkit, but it might not come back out of the toolkit for another couple of years until you're like, oh yes, I remember I used that, or I did that with that child and that worked. But you might have taught five other children in the interim, you know, with similar needs, and that may not have worked. So that's, I think that's where your confidence as a teacher comes in. As the years progress, you know, you as I said, you have these things in your toolkit, and you know what has worked for some children, and you have the confidence to go, no, that's not right. That's not what I need today or this year. This is what I need. And, you know, you go from there and you try and create an environment and a plan to help that child as best you can. But you're, the great thing about this job is you're always learning.
You're always having to upskill. I know that myself. And there's always kind of, I suppose, new strategies coming into place. And I suppose it's kind of updating yourself, you know, and it can be so difficult. And I do admire teachers that, you know, could have 20, 30 kids in their class, and they all have their own individual needs. And sometimes these issues don't, I suppose, pop up until they're, you know, a few years even into their primary school education. It's very hard, as we spoke about before we started the podcast, was working with children that are younger, you know, especially with myself now from kind of preschool to primary school age group. And, you know, you might say, is there something? And then you're very slow to say it, because it might just be that, you know, not every child kind of develops in the same way. And you're kind of saying, okay, well, maybe next year now they'll kind of, you know, take a huge step in that direction and that everything will be okay. But then you also want to be prepared in case they need additional help with that certain area as well. So it's a kind of, there's a fine line between it as well. Have you found, you know, that there is a bit of a lack of communication between preschools and primary schools in regard to, I suppose, forwarding on information about children coming into the primary school?
So I had junior infants for a good number of years. First, when I first began my career, so I did 5 years in infants, and then I took a break from infants and went back then to them. So I've been that teacher where you are, you know, Jennifer, passing on that information. And it definitely has improved in later years. I think, you know, and like you were saying, it can be difficult to figure out, you know, if it's something that it is a red flag there, or is it just a developmental thing and you haven't just reached that milestone yet? But I think that just by even forgetting about labels or any of that, but just even being specific when you're communicating to other teachers, previous teachers, teachers going forward, parents, it's, I think if you even just stick to the actual facts of what, be specific, like, for example, you know, they're not able to recite any nursery rhymes, or they find it difficult to remember that they should put on their coat before they go out to the yard. You know, those specific things are just highlighting that there is, you know, they have difficulty with a particular area, but you're not necessarily saying that there's anything there, because you're waiting, I suppose. It's very much you're creating, if you can imagine, like a 30-piece jigsaw, more even. And each red flag, I suppose, creates part of that jigsaw. And it's up to us as educators to decide when the time is right, or to have that confidence to say, yes, I think we need to take that up, that next step. And like you were saying, Jennifer, about, you know, your continuous professional development, like there really, I felt like looking back, there wasn't half enough training in the area of dyslexia, especially because you're doing like all additional needs in one module or whatever. Like you're really not. And it's hard, I suppose, because you don't have any real life experience of it either. So I suppose, you know, how much you're really taking in or understanding about it until you see it yourself. But so that's, you know, and then myself and Tracy both went on to do a postgrad in dyslexia there a number of years ago with the University of Birmingham, because we really felt like we knew some, but we didn't know enough. So we wanted to learn more, and we did our postgrad with the University of Birmingham, which was great. It was distance learning. You know, you could do some of it on your own time. And in the UK, if you do this postgrad, you're actually qualified to assess for dyslexia with the qualification that you receive. However, here in Ireland, it's a medical model. So it's an educational psychologist that assesses for dyslexia. But in the UK, like if I were to go back into my own school, then they have a, what they call a specialist teacher on site. So therefore, anyone that in the school that they feel may have dyslexia, I can run the assessments. I can find out, you know, I can help. And because you know the children better in the school, you know that you know lots of parts of that jigsaw from over the years, just from getting to know the children, the family, the parents, and so on. So you actually have a lot of incidental information at hand anyway. So yes, as I was saying, it is very much a jigsaw, and you're putting together, it can take a long time to create that full picture. It takes around 2 years of formal schooling before you can decide whether you feel that the next step is appropriate or not. And that takes a team effort within the school, the class teacher, the resource and learn support, or SET as they're known now, any SNAs that may be involved in the classroom, the principal, and of course the parents, you know, because they all help to create that picture, that full picture. You know, and then and the assessment being just one part of that. So there's a lot that goes into making that decision. And again, I think that comes from, you know, experiencing it over the years, and realizing you've seen some of this before, or this part of it is new, and putting all that together to create that picture.
And we often talk about open communication here on the podcast. And I think it's so important, because you can have a group of adults, you'd say the teacher, the early years educator, and the parents, all kind of fighting with each other, or, you know, getting along, but sometimes it is a battle, and we kind of forget about the child and what the benefits are if we work together as a team. The child kind of can sometimes fall through the cracks. So it's great to have open and honest communication, I think, is honest being the key word there, especially on the parents' behalf, which is something that they struggle with. I think, you know, obviously dealing with something like that as a parent is going to be pretty heartbreaking as well for them. But I suppose if people don't know, I assume the majority of people do know, but could you just explain to us what dyslexia is and how it kind of portrays itself?
So dyslexia is a specific literacy difficulty, and it presents itself, you know, in, that's why it's called specific literacy, because it's in the area of literacy. In saying that, though, it bleeds into other academic areas in addition to just literacy, because, you know, we have reading involved in subjects like maths, obviously history, geography, and science, and so on. So it does, it, you can see it presenting itself in other academic subjects also. What you're looking for really is, from the International Dyslexia Association, it's a difficulty with accurate word recognition, spelling, and decoding. And it's an unexpected or almost unexplained difficulty. So you may have a child who is very together in all other aspects, but seems to have this difficulty picking up literacy. And that has to be despite intervention. So, you know, if an assessment was suggested, or someone was going for an assessment, you know, the psychologist would look for the intervention that has taken place in the meantime. So have we tried to help this child? And as you said, Aoife, you know, that's where the communication comes in. You know, have we as educators tried to help the child? Have the parents tried to help the child, or has the parents tried to help the child? And have we all worked together as a team? And despite all of that, and there are no, and making sure that there are no medical issues at play, such as hearing or sight or anything else, you know, like illnesses that have resulted in long absences from school, then, you know, then you may decide to go ahead for an assessment. Like, dyslexia affects 10% of our population. That's probably a modest figure here in Ireland. I know in other countries they work off a higher percentage. So you're talking about, in your class of 30 children, you're talking about 3 children at least. You know, in your school of 700 children, you're talking about 70 children at least. It runs in families. It affects all ages. People can be diagnosed at all different ages. It goes across all socioeconomic backgrounds, and all people with dyslexia are different. It presents in different ways. It may be more in the area of spelling, maybe in the more of the area of reading, comprehension, writing, or in all areas. So it can range from mild to severe.
And it's definitely, like, it's not a new learning difficulty. You know, it has been around and has been prevalent for years and years, you know, and in school, I think the amount of children in my class and even going up into secondary school that would have said, like, I'm dyslexic, I have dyslexia. You know, it was actually very common, especially in the classes that I was in. And it's nearly like a forgotten learning difficulty or like a hidden learning difficulty, and people don't take it quite seriously. I think only that I have seen it and how it has affected people in my family. You know, and it's really, really difficult. And I don't think until you kind of talk to somebody who has dyslexia or, you know, see how their mind works, especially in regard to kind of writing and reading. It's actually very interesting how they're, because I, for one example, personally, you know, my cousin would have been writing assignments and I would read over them for her. And, you know, I would read something and I would say, what, you know, what is that word? And, you know, she would say it out to me, but she actually wouldn't recognize the mistake, you know. And for people that don't understand dyslexia, you know, they can't really understand that. They might say, well, why don't you read over? Why don't you spell check? But it's just the fact that they actually can't, they don't see that there's an actual mistake there, you know. So it's, I would say it's actually quite difficult and frustrating for anybody who is going through the schooling system in Ireland that, you know, it's nearly like a learning difficulty that will fall through the cracks unless they have somebody like yourself who is a kind of responsive educator that will say, okay, look, there is this there and I need to help you and support you with it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's great, Jennifer, that you're very aware of it and that you've heard it throughout your schooling life, because it wasn't something I would have heard when I was growing up in primary or secondary school. Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure, of course, there were people with dyslexia, you know, in my class, but not to my knowledge, and it was never spoken about. Yeah, it can be forgotten and maybe downplayed somewhat, you know, because, like, you know, as you said, you've seen the effects of it and how very frustrating it can be when someone is trying to do their best and it's just not happening or falling into place for them, or when they produce something and, as you said, it's peppered with spelling mistakes or grammatical errors, and then someone else, an educator, comes along and tells the child or the person or the adult that, even though they've put in their best work, you know, because their best work, you know, is probably up here, but getting it out on paper in the traditional way that we would be used to, it can be very difficult, you know. So yeah, and, like, you know, in Ireland, no child with dyslexia in the primary school system is actually entitled to any help. So even with a diagnosis, you're not actually entitled to receive support. The school has to work on a priority needs basis. So what happens is we get our hours of additional support and we have to dole those out as best we can. And of course, schools will do their very best to help every child who has any type of need in the school system. But, you know, as I said, if you're looking at 10% of your school population, like, to think that we would target everyone's individual needs specifically is wishful thinking, unfortunately. You know, we can try our best and we can help children a lot of the time in group situations or in class situations, which is brilliant and it works really well. And there's lots and lots of advantages to that, you know, children working together and, you know, peer tutoring and, you know, the benefits of playing games with one another, you know, obviously based on literacy, or, you know, collaborating together to create something. But to target everyone's specific needs would require a lot more support that we just don't have.
That's highlighting, I suppose, one of the many issues we have in the school and education system. And I suppose I'd say medical, in air quotes, medical side of things as well, about the wait lists and the wait times. So it's great that you're kind of highlighting that and talking about that as well. It's something we try to be super honest about as well on the podcast, about the reality of getting help for children, particularly nowadays. But I, as you were speaking about, you know, the kind of the traits of dyslexia, I remember sitting in my first year maths class and our maths teacher came in and the first thing he said was, all your homework corrections, my ticks in particular, are going to be the opposite way around because I have dyslexia. And I just remember being like, what? Like, you know, as in, to me, it didn't make sense that his like ticks, that his corrections would be backwards, because I personally thought it was always just words and spelling and reading. So it was funny, not a ha-ha funny, but to see that he, you know, said very, very like, hi, this is who I am, and this is what I have. And then everyone was like, all right, okay. But I suppose, like, what signs should parents and educators look out for? Because like I said, that was something I didn't even realize. And I learned a lot then, obviously, when I looked into it from him.
That's funny. And like, look how comfortable he was to say that to you, like, you know, and, you know, to share that with you, because, you know, no doubt there were children in the class who also struggled or knew they had dyslexia, and, you know, probably found comfort from that. So that's fantastic. But like the signs and indicators. So in the primary school setting, I suppose we kind of split into lower primary and upper primary. And when you're looking at the lower primary, you know, as I said, you know, you can, as long as a child is in almost like 2 years of formal schooling, you can then decide whether you feel that they may need, we need to take that next step. So what you're really watching out for is, well, first of all, like, you know, simple things. And I just want to put this with a caveat. Like, this again is a jigsaw. Like, this is not what, if you hear one of these things that your child struggles with, that does not mean that they have dyslexia. Like, this is a whole picture. You're looking into family history, you're looking into medical history, as I said, and you're looking to all of these things that take time to collect those pieces of information. So it you know, it's not something we just decide overnight, or, you know, focus on one thing. Oh, they get their B's and D's mixed up. That must be dyslexia. That's not, because that's, you know, very normal and very common in classrooms all around the country up until a certain point. And then you might put that error with 10 more errors or, you know, pieces of information that you've gathered over the years and realize, okay, maybe there's something here. So what you're really like watching out for are things like, you know, reciting rhymes, the ability to remember details and stories. Like, we've all met the children who are fantastic at remembering the details or can say stories and rhymes like verbatim. And then we see the children who have been exposed, you know, and if not, the parents aren't exposing children to rhymes and stories and songs, which we all encourage as educators, but it's that the children don't, you know, necessarily hear that lyrical way of speaking with rhyme, or, you know, pick up on those key words or a key event in the story. You're talking about hearing the sounds of words, like, you know, children may struggle with understanding that, you know, oh, all of these items begin with this sound, or all of these items end in the sound. They may have difficulty with attacking words when they're reading. So, you know, sounding out words, breaking words up, or they may read a word correctly on one line and then misread it on the next line. And you'd be sitting there, you know, as an educator going, you just read that correctly, and now you've completely forgotten what you've read. So memory, like, you know, short-term memory, that's called your working memory, like holding information, can be a big struggle for people with dyslexia. Like, 10% of the population have trouble with their working memory as it is, and that increases 20-50% of with people who have dyslexia. So what I mean by working memory is holding information in your brain and then doing something with it quite shortly afterwards. So remembering a phone number, someone relaying that phone number to you, you remembering that phone number, taking out your phone and dialing it, or someone's giving you directions and then you have to remember them to follow them. So that's your working memory. You are holding that information for a short period of time. You don't need it forever, and then doing something with that information. So working memory can be a huge problem. Fluent reading, so reading that just does, that sounds stuttered, and no matter, you know, how familiar reading is fantastic and rereading is very, very important, but that fluency, like, still may not come, even though that person has read that piece and has heard someone else read it even for them a number of times. So fluency and accuracy in reading. They might rely on memorizing. So, like, especially little ones, when they're beginning to read, they might memorize their book rather than actually read it. So they're like, oh, I know that page. And some children are fantastic at that, which can be masking dyslexia then, you know. Some children are very clever at memorizing and can reproduce things, but actually don't know the workings of it, like, the for themselves. You know, they're just relying on what they've been told, what they've heard, but they don't understand it actually for themselves. Tracking and taking down from the board. So like looking, like if we think about what's involved in doing that, you know, you have to look at the board, you have to find where you are, read it, remember that information or some of it at least, look down at your copy, find the right place in your copybook, put that into the correct place, like at the top, starting from the left, moving over to the right, and then looking back up and continuing where you left off. And you could be back in the back of a classroom. So you can imagine how difficult that can be for some people, children and adults alike. Like if you're in a lecture hall or, you know, in a presentation for work, how difficult that can be. Things like letter formation can be tricky, writing, like producing any kind of volume of writing, because you know what the children again are trying to do are get the thoughts in their head, and then to get those thoughts from their head onto a piece of paper, you know, may cause huge difficulty. Whereas if you asked the child the information, it might be a lot, or the person or adult, it may be a lot easier for them to relay the information orally rather than writing. So, and then as you said, Aoife, you know, your teacher doing the ticks backwards, yeah, left and right, organizing yourself and remembering what you need. Like, for example, like a child packing their bag, like, what do I need? Oh, I need like 4 items to go swimming, or I need 4-5 items to pack my bag in the morning. Like remembering things like that, very practical things. And, you know, your dyslexia can be quite evident in that area too.
That's amazing information to have, because I think there's definitely educators and teachers who might be listening to this podcast today to say, okay, that sounds, you know, like this particular child. And I've definitely have gone through a couple of children in my head as you were speaking, saying there's definitely possibly, you know, like we said, it's a jigsaw, so I can't really say for sure, but it could have been information that I could have passed along to their teacher. So their teacher could have been aware of it as they went through primary school as well. So knowing that information is so important. And would you say that, you know, let's say early years educators and primary school teachers should be more informed and have maybe lectures and college courses on dyslexia when they're going through college? Because although we're not going to use it, let's say, in the early years, we still have that tool in our toolbox to be able to say, this is a red flag when you're passing that information along to the primary school teacher.
Oh, definitely. Like, you know, and I've received some fantastic reports over the years. And I say reports, like it might be, you know, from the preschools, or like I can put on my own shoes, I can put on my own coat, I can, you know, I can use Velcro or buttons, I can take out my lunchbox, you know, all very early year stuff. But actually, it's the kind of thing that the minute they walk into me and junior infants, that's the kind of thing I'm watching out for. And I'm not saying in relation to dyslexia, but just in terms of being independent and being able for school. So regardless whether it's dyslexia or not, it's very important, I think, to highlight these things, because then we know then as the children pass into us, you know, how we can help them. Or and you know, we know specifically where their areas of need are, and we can help target those, you know, whether it be they can't use their lunchbox correctly or pack it back into their bag, we can help them with that, or the coat or the shoes, or maybe colouring, or, you know, fine motor skills such as threading, beading, jigsaws and so on. So, you know, they're all little things that we'd like to know anyway, regardless of dyslexia. But yeah, I think continuous professional development is very important. And that's an area that we are moving into now to help with primary schools, because we know that the need is out there from our Instagram page, from the emails that we've received, that teachers want to know more. And I think, as I said earlier, it becomes more relevant when you're on the ground, because actually then that's when you want to know more and want to learn more, because it's you're seeing it in real time and in real life, not just in a lecture hall. So applying, you know, continuous professional development when you're in the classroom is a lot easier than when you're just training to go to the classroom.
And for any parents and educators listening at the moment, you know, if you're kind of slow to give a report into a primary school, it's something that we are working on now in the last few weeks, is getting reports together with parents and with the child involved as well, and then giving them into the primary school, just so that they have that heads up. And I mean, it's really important to support the child before they even start in September, because there's no point in the child entering school in September with this need that is known by the parent and the educator, the early years educator. And then they go into school and, you know, the primary school, you know, you have maybe 20, 30 new junior infants to get to know. And it could be, you know, a few months down the line before you even kind of pick up on it or spot that kind of need. So if you know that, you can have the child supported. So it would be a bit of advice that I would give to parents listening at the moment to have that chat with your child's preschool before the year is out. And same with educators, to have a chat with the parents, you know, definitely okay with the parents first, and then say, look, we can put a report together to get this in. And again, it's all about the child and supporting the child. The child is kind of the main centre with in all our work. So it's so important that they're supported. And Donna, while you were talking there about, you know, children struggling with, you know, even taking down from the board and all of that, you know, so important for us, even as we have an after school in our service, and you might have five or six kids at the one table from the one classroom doing their homework. And, you know, it might take one child a bit longer to, you know, even answering questions, to look at the question and then go back to answer, and that back and forth. And it's so important for us to keep in mind to be patient, and that that child might need an extra 15 minutes, you know, to do their literacy than the other child, you know, and to have that patience and to say it's okay to, you know, for them to have that extra bit of time. You know, sometimes I suppose we're always so fast moving and trying to get, you know, from one thing to another thing, that we kind of, you know, lose awareness of actually supporting each individual child within the classroom as well.
Definitely. And, you know, we're not perfect either. You know, we're trying our best. So it's hard to always be mindful and cognizant of each and every child that's in front of you. But I think, you know, as you said, all you can do is remind yourself, yes, that child might need extra time. Or what can I do? Like, even just on the most simple level, like if you have a child in front of you that has that you feel has a difficulty in the area of literacy in some way, it's like, how can I make this an easier road for them? Whether it be making sure that they are facing onto the board as opposed to sitting at the side of a table so that they have to turn to look at the board, whether it be like that they're sitting closer to the front. And that doesn't mean that they have to be up the front all year and not move around like everybody else gets to move around. But, you know, making sure that they have a good viewpoint, you know, whether it means, you know, that they don't have to take those sums or that literacy work off the board, that maybe you make a photocopy for them, or, you know, that you can differentiate it in some way. Or, you know, if we're doing a word search, that you might highlight every second line so that not everything jumbles in together. You know, you just ask yourself, what am I trying to achieve here in my lesson? And how can I make this a little bit easier for the students sitting in front of me? You know, that they will welcome, and in a subtle and discreet way, so that they don't feel that they're being singled out, but that they feel that they're being supported in their journey through school, because it's difficult at the best of times. Now, never mind if you have a difficulty with literacy.
Yeah, 100%. And in your opinion, is there enough support around dyslexia in Ireland? Or if there isn't, is there any resources that you could kind of mention for parents and educators to check out? Obviously, Dyslexia Matters Ireland on Instagram is one resource, so everyone should go and follow that page. But is there anything in your opinion we should be kind of reading up on or looking out for, or any good accounts that you should follow?
So I think as a parent, it can be very daunting to hear that your child has dyslexia, or even just to know that they have a literacy difficulty before that's even confirmed. So if you know that your child has a literacy difficulty, you're like, yes, I do know. You know, you as a parent, parents feel that they don't know enough about dyslexia, and that might may be the case, but actually they know their child. They are their child's best educator, and teachers, schools, they'll all change, but you as a parent will remain constant. And that's not to make parents, you know, feel that this is even more daunting. That's actually to say that you are the expert there, you know, in terms of, you know the little nuances of your child, what they struggle with. Well, they understand the difference between B and D when they see it in isolation, but they don't understand the difference of it if it's in a passage of reading, because it just becomes too much for them. Like, even to impart that information helps a teacher so much. So what you can do as a parent is just to listen out, you know, when you're doing homework. and to really see. And I would have a little notebook or a little or take note of some sort, you know, for example, if I felt that they can, as I said, the B and D, if they knew it in isolation, if I showed them flashcards of the letter B and D and they knew, well, that's the B, that's the D, or they know the sound of it, but they can't tell the difference between them when they're reading or writing, then that's something to note. If you feel that they do very well in their spelling tests, which, you know, is a whole different issue in itself, because, you know, children can reproduce spellings on a Friday, but get the spelling wrong the very next day in their, you know, when they're writing in their copies. So if you feel that, you know, they consistently misspell words with vowels in them, or they miss out the vowels, that's something else to note. All of those little pieces of information are very important. And then as a parent, you can actually help target that. So if I knew then as a parent, okay, like I feel as a mountain to climb, but I can start somewhere, and the place I can start is I can start helping them to understand that vowels are very important in words, and that, like, I can stretch out the word when they're writing it so they can really hear the vowels. And if that doesn't work, well, then maybe, like, you know, I can just do work on vowels in isolation. Like, you know, can they recognize them? Can they tell me what sound they make? And can they write them? That's, you're going back. So what you're trying to do is find the little gaps in their learning and fill them in little by little. It's, you know, it's not asking someone to take on huge amount of work, and I'm talking maybe 3 to 5 minutes. So if you notice something like that, you could either, if the child is ready for it, you could do it there and then, just say, look, we're just going to pause the moment for a second, let's have a look here at words with I'm going to call out some words. Can you tell me which one has the a sound in them and which one does not? So we could do a thumbs up, thumbs down game, and, you know, work on that, and that could be 3 minutes. But, you know, it's about starting small. Or, for example, the B and the D, well, let me put those two letters up in the fridge, or let me, you know, play a game. Or if you're not comfortable doing it there and then, because it can be very difficult to think of these ideas on the spot, and it's easy for me to say these things, you know, with teaching experience behind me, you can Google it, you know, put it in, like, games or activities to help children who cannot hear the vowel in a word. So that's something you could do at home. You could start very small, pick one area that they need to work on and try your best to help them with that. I mean, progress is progress. If it's one step forward, it's one step forward. It's better than staying still. So, and then the next thing to do is to communicate all of those things to your school. You know, they, as you said before, Jennifer, like, you know, it can take months to notice these things as a teacher, and teachers generally change year on year. So you could be talking about November, December before the teacher realizes they actually have a problem with, you know, telling the difference between B and D. I really need to talk to them, or they don't know their vowel sounds, or, you know, they can read words better in isolation, but when they're in a piece of text, that's where the difficulty comes in. So by you, like, you know, informing the teacher about that, that keeps the lines of communication open, and everyone's working in the, you know, for the same reason, for the better of the child's education. And I know you mentioned communication before, you know, keeping those lines of communication open with your school, and that goes from teachers as well, is so important, because assuming that each other is informed isn't good enough, because we don't know if they are informed. We don't know if people realize, teachers realize, or parents realize. And it's very important, you know, to carve out that little time slot where you can have a phone call with either the teacher or the parent. And, you know, not just that casual chat in the yard or in the mornings, because often that can be, you know, that can catch even to either teachers or parents on the hop. So, you know, the best thing to do is just, like, you know, to ring, to make an appointment, and just to even give a heads up as, I want to speak to you about literacy. And the same for parents, I want to speak to the teacher about literacy. So that gets everybody thinking before the phone call even happens. And then, you know yourself, if you received a call and said, oh, you know, the parent wants to speak to us about literacy, you would be thinking, okay, where are they at literacy? I wonder what this could be about. You know, where are my notes? How can I help this child? And then you're more informed and ready for that call when it comes. So, and then, as I said, that improves the lines of communication, which can only help the child in the long run.
That's such useful information, I think, for all of us. And it's great to get an insight into, you know, I suppose what we can do. Sometimes I think we don't give ourselves enough credit as educators on actually what we can do support the children while they're in our care as well. And I think you're downplaying your Instagram page a small bit because I've actually flicked through it there the last 2 weeks, and you give amazing support and information on that as well. So just for our listeners, can you let us know where they can find you on Instagram as well?
So our Instagram is at Dyslexia Matters Ireland. We have a Facebook page as well, which is Dyslexia Matters Ireland. And also we have our website, www.dyslexiamattersireland.ie. So our Instagram page is probably more active than our Facebook page in terms of the Q&As and the information that we try to share on that. But everything that we share, you know, we've researched and checked and recheck the factual information, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I would say to parents to make sure that, you know, wherever you're getting information from, that it is accurate. You know, whether it be from the Dyslexia Association of Ireland, from the International Dyslexia Association, the British Dyslexia Association, these are websites that we would visit regularly to check information, to make sure that we are accurate. And then also, you know, there's ever-changing legislation in relation to dyslexia and schools, you know, in relation to support the children can receive, assistive technology, the exemptions from GAELGA. So, you know, we do give accurate information, but what we may say may change because, you know, another circular may come out and that information may change. So, you know, it is important as a parent to stay on top of that information. You know, if you're tuned into this area, you will hear those announcements in the news, or you will see them on your Instagram feed or your Facebook feed, because if you follow these particular pages, you know, like any dyslexia association, whether it's national or international, you know, they will have accurate information as well as ourselves. And I think that's important, to be informed. Like, to be informed makes parents feel more secure, and also probably confirms for them that, yes, I am doing a good job, or yes, I am trying my best, or yes, I am going in the right direction. Because parents often don't give themselves enough credit. And we have our parent, you know, we run our parent online courses, or we do our parent consultations. You know, parents are often beating themselves up, but actually, you know, we can say to them, you know, very honestly, that you're doing a great job, and I think you're doing the best that you can do, you know, with the situation that you're in. And that's not necessarily overloading your child at work, because that's not what we want as educators. Dyslexia Matters Ireland, we don't want to overwork children, because there's enough on them as it is. It's about tweaking what we're doing to make it more accessible for them. And that's what we try and do, to help parents and teachers do that for their children in their care.
That's a great point. And we all know social media can be a place of I'd want to say fakeness or falseness, but some accounts can be. So it's important that you kind of explained where your background is coming from and, you know, the information. It's like us, anytime we put up any advice, we always kind of say, this is our experience, this is what worked for us, it may not work for this child. So it's really important to kind of get your information from a reliable source. But your page is incredible. Like Jenny said, you know, you're climbing steadily in your followers and in your I suppose people who interact with your page. It's amazing. And it's great to see some resources online, because I think a lot of resources are moving, unfortunately, to social media, where it's more accessible. It's you can kind of get that instant gratification from, you know, checking your feed or checking the page. And I suppose in terms of Dyslexia Matters Ireland, what's next for you? What do you want to achieve over the next couple of weeks or years?
So, you know, at the moment we're running our parent online courses and our parent consultations. We also tutor one-to-one, which is, you know, it's lovely because, you know, you get to put everything that you're learning into practice. And again, as I said, you know, you might pull out something from your toolkit that you learned 10 years ago, or that worked with a child from 10 years ago, and other children might be, you know, more complex in relation to what they might need, and you're learning all over again. So it's fantastic. So that's what we're currently doing. And then we are just ready to launch our teacher's course now at the end of May. So that's an online course for individual teachers to participate in that will help them both in the classroom and if they're tutoring during the summer, which we know is actually, you know, becoming more and more common as the years go on. You had the July provision scheme. Now we have the summer provision scheme. So, you know, in order to get the most out of that, it's important that we know where we can start with children and how to start. And then we are designing our course for schools for the next academic year. So we've a lot going on, and it's exciting and it's new, and it's an area that we just genuinely just love working in. So we just want to help share that knowledge and help other teachers, you know, and parents in the world of literacy when it comes to helping the children. Everyone wins then.
Yeah, if you're not busy enough, you know, in your daily jobs, you just added a couple of more, a bigger workload to your plates. But it's amazing. And look, thanks so much for coming on and chatting to myself and Jenny today. Unfortunately, Jenny has been called away, as duty calls, being a manager of two busy creche centres. But I know we both learned a lot from you, and the advice that you've kind of given out will definitely benefit a lot of our listeners, parents and educators alike. So thanks so much again for coming on and chatting to us.
Eva, thank you for having me, and to Jennifer, and it was great talking to you both. It's a topic that I could talk all day on, as you can probably tell. But it's really been lovely to chat to you both, and thanks again.
No worries. We'll chat to you soon, Dana. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
As always, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Little Steps, Big Futures, the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate and review. And if you would like to get in touch, please find us on Instagram and Facebook at Little Steps, Big Futures. See you next time.